Loud. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Gary here, and welcome to another edition of Dishing It Out Bite Size. Our palate cleanser ahead of the return of the new series in a few weeks on Go Loud or wherever you get your pods. Today, you're getting a stew making masterclass, and we hear from the great man himself, Nevin Maguire, who gives us an amazing insight into how his own incredible journey with food began. Anybody that missed this one, it was one of the best episodes we've ever done. Enjoy.
So our technique of the week this week is stewing. And it probably sounds like, oh yeah, what do I need to know about stewing? It's kind of a mundane type of thing. But really, stewing is a technique that, it's kind of a technique that really works to make secondary ingredients and cheaper cuts of meat especially turn into something that's probably better than a primary cut. So what do I mean by that? So if you're talking about a primary cut, you're talking about loins of lamb, lamb cutlets, beef fillets, sirloins, ribeyes. They're all kind of your prime cuts, and they can be cooked less and they can be like really tender without having to tenderize them. But then if you move into your secondary cuts, like your shoulders, your shanks, your bellies, your cheeks, things like that, they have to be cooked slower. And a few weeks ago we spoke about braising, but another way to braise or cook something slow is, of course, on the solid top or up on the stove, and it's stewing. So it's where you take, we'll use our old trusty stob pot again, or a cassolet pot, that nice big heavy pot that you have with a lid. And then you put your ingredients in there, and probably the most famous thing as an Irish person is, of course, the coddle. And Gary thought I was going to say stew there. I could see it in his eyes, and he's shaking his head. Yeah, but no, of course, an Irish stew or even a coddle are two good examples of a stew. But things like, you know, if you move into different parts of the world, curries are stewed. Tagines, if you move into Morocco and that part of the world, are all stewed. So it's where you take a secondary cut. So if we do an Irish stew, we'll do a classic one, an Irish stew. You take leg or shoulder of lamb, you blanch it in water, meaning you drop it into bring cold water up to the boil, give it a good skim, get rid of that first batch of water. This is a real classic way to
do. You know, Gareth, I'll jump in there. So many people don't know how important
it is
to blanch the meat and get rid of all that sort of scumminess. Is the wrong word, but
it's getting the impurities out of that first part of the lamb. And there's a very classic dish that you learn when you're in college called a blanket de veau. So it's a white veal stew, and it's that's what you do. You bring the lamb up to the boil. As soon as it comes up to the boil, give it a skim, get rid of that first lot of water. There'll be a lot of people listening, especially people's mothers or fathers that would have made a stew that wouldn't do that. And you don't have to do it, but it just gets rid of the impurities. And then putting fresh water or stock in on top of that, bring it back up to the boil, and then you'd add in your vegetables, your carrots, your celery, your turnip, your onions, and then a bouquet of garni, which is just a leek skin that you put some thyme and rosemary, and you wrap it up together in some bay leaf, and you pop it in. And then if you're putting barley or anything else like that in, and then you cook it low and slow, so the lid slightly ajar on the top of the pot, and you'd cook that for like two and a half hours until the meat is nice and tender. And then a half an hour before it's finished, you add in your potatoes, bring it back up to the boil, adjust the seasoning, and that's a really classic lamb stew. But Gary, maybe you have a different type of stew recipe you'd like to share.
Yeah, I suppose it's funny you say the blanket de veau there, and then I suppose the Irish stew then is the blanket d'agneau. Like, I was laughing to myself here. It's a long time since I heard those old college terminology.
I could see the fear in your eyes when I said it. It was actually my last exam. I made it from my exam. And you have to turn your carrots and turn your potatoes, and
yes,
it's a very classic way of doing things. But it done correctly is a really, really beautiful old school dish or technique. And you don't really see it in restaurants anymore unless you're traveling around, maybe somewhere down in the south of France or somewhere in the winter. You'd get a restaurant.
You know what? a lot of those restaurants and bars in and around Temple Bars, like, because tourists coming over want to try a beef and Guinness stew or a blanket d'agneau, a traditional Irish stew. And you'll often see it in some on billboards or blackboards outside a lot of them bars in Temple Bar. I mean, I've never tried it. I think Horrocks Place, the Boxty House.
That's right.
He's a brilliant cook, an old school chef as well. And Porrick, like, the Boxty House is actually the absolute best place to go if you want to get a nice bowl of Irish stew, because you can be sure it's made by a total pro in there as well. So if you haven't had one in a long time, roll down to the Boxty House. But I'm going to go, the minute you said coddle, Gareth, I said I would do studies. I don't know if you remember many, many weeks or months ago.
Yeah, you mentioned it before, but I've forgotten.
Whenever you were talking about the coddle, I mentioned one that we would have made in Donegal called studies. And again, just like that, you'd basically be making a meatball with mince, okay? And like that, you would bring up some water to a boil or a simmer, and you would drop in the beef meatballs that you just make the way you just squeezing the meat together, really. If you want to have them light, you can add all or manipulate stuff, but for the stew, it ends up adding impurities to the stew. So it's literally the meatballs tightened up in your fist and then rolled, seasoned. Drop them in to, again, get rid of that first bit of impurity and sort of scumminess out of them, and then set it aside. Now in a separate pot, in your thicker pot, your staub or your cassolet, your Maripagas in, like, so again, it's carrot, onion, white of leek, and a little bit of celery, and then chunks of rooster potatoes or Morris Piper potatoes. Roosters are probably better because they're not as floury and they won't break down as much as the Morris Piper. So go with a rooster potato in chunks, everything kind of decent chunks, and then back in with the meatball that you've kind of boiled or blanched, and you're going to cover that in water again. And some pieces of potato, same trick as a lot of people would use with the coddle, have like a load of slightly smaller pieces of potato that are going to end up overcooking, and you want them to slightly overcook because they're going to create the starch that's going to actually thicken the broth. Okay, you want to have the bigger ones that are remain whole, and you're going to just season that, add in your bokeh garni as well, and bring it up to a boil and then leave it on a simmer and leave it simmer. And look, mammy used, or granny used to leave it simmer on the edge of a stove, you know, for a good hour and a half, like really, really hot, until the potatoes and everything was cooked through. And then you give it the odd little stir with the back of a wooden spoon, and every now and again you'd catch a potato and you'd sort of nearly crush it against the back of the pot if it was too thin. You would keep sort of crushing the potato against the pot until you got the broth to a nice, decent sort of consistency. And that in Donegal is known as a pot of studies.
What did you call the Liverpool dish? Does this, and it sounds very like that, I can't remember what it's called, but in over in Liverpool, there's a stew like that that's made, and it's very similar. And I think it's they say the origins of it is because so many Irish people would have emigrated over to
I'm getting Scouse,
yeah, yep. Bowl of Scouse, that's it. Scouse is like a similar type of thing. A bowl of Scouse is a, and it's mental to think that these, they're really very they're peasant dishes, right? And would have been cooked on an agar. If you go back even further, they would have been cooked on an open fire where they just sit and hunt.
Well, it was a Stanley Range in Donegal. It wasn't a fucking agar, I can tell you that, or an agar. It was on an old school Stanley Range. I got mine made on anyway. But I tell you what, they were absolutely beautiful. And the odd time, now my brother loved it white, like blanquette, like that. But you could also add, like, you know, you could mix like a tablespoon or teaspoon or two of Bisto.
All right,
whisk that into it to thicken it a wee bit, and also to make it darker and more gravy, like, you know what I mean? I kind of preferred it like that. But to be honest, and to some people it might sound disgusting, like the boiled meatball or whatever it was. I got to say, the flavor in this, it's right bang on an Irish stew, actually. Yeah. Obviously, it's beef mince as opposed to lamb. Lamb isn't for everyone. So if you're not mad about lamb, and lots of people aren't, it's a lovely way of having a stew with the meatball. It goes white, actually. Like, it's almost like a pork meatball, or it wouldn't be as white as a chicken meatball, but it certainly doesn't look like your traditional dark meatball that you would have in a ragu normally, you know what I mean? But it's a beautiful, beautiful dish. It's a lifetime since I made it, actually. I must give it a wee rattle at some point, you know.
Well, seeing as we're in the middle of July now, it's probably the perfect time to make a blading pot of stew, scouts, yeah, or well, whatever you want to call it.
As the rain hits me sideways, all I can think on is the stew gas.
Speaking of that, like, so where is the early days of Nevin Maguire? How did it all start?
Wow.
I know Gavin or Gary and I would know a little bit of your background, but someone that never heard of you, how did food start in your life?
I suppose my mother, because we're from family of nine, and then that's where I got the love. Yeah, there's nine of us, wow. Five boys, four girls. Wow. So I'm between, you obviously know that. And I suppose mum and dad opened the restaurant in 1989, and all the family worked in the restaurant. Yeah. So a lot of people wouldn't know that we closed our restaurant from 73 to 89, was bombed twice, wow, during the trouble. So
yeah, we were chatting about that earlier in the intro. I mentioned that, because I'm pretty sure that McNean House got blown up, because you're on the border.
Absolutely.
Of Enniskillen, yeah, really, pretty much. How close to the border?
Well, we're about 15 minutes from Enniskillen. We're about 2 minutes from Belcoo,
which is
literally across the... And a lot of my staff are from Fermanagh.
And so was it always a restaurant? Or was it,
yeah.
And obviously, well, people can stay there now as well.
Yeah, I suppose we always had maybe 4 or 5 bedrooms. Now we have 20 bedrooms in a town.
Is there that many rooms now? Wow.
Amazing.
Good man.
Wow. Cookery school. Yeah, I do love the school. I love the way it's kind of organically kind of grown over the years. You know, yeah, you know, now we do one sitting, like COVID changed everything. We're not doing two sittings. We have 60 people.
A lot of chefs, you know, in restaurants, the chef owners went the same way. They were just shortening menus, less numbers, maybe less nights, but then just the standards, they say, like, they can focus more on a smaller number, and it's consistent all the time.
Yeah. And I think to hold on to your staff, for us, you know, we saw, like, when we reopened after COVID, 50 of the original staff came back, like, we have 60 staff, wow, now. We used to do 100 every Sunday lunch and 50 at night, and now we close on a Sunday. I honestly think,
do you?
Yeah, honestly, it's probably the best decision we've ever done in our business, closing, wow, on a Sunday. And, you know,
chefs love that, I'd say.
But all staff do.
Yeah.
Genuinely, guys, because, yeah, you know, it's an industry that's busy at the weekends. We were full every Sunday night, 3 services. And to have a weekend day off, it's a deal breaker now, truthfully. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
And then we close 2 weeks at Christmas. And this year, for the first year, we're closing a week in June to break up the year, because, you know, we're lucky. We're full nearly every night.
Aye. Right.
We do get cancellations, but we're, you know, we're not big. Yeah. But we are very lucky that we have a consistent
going back
business.
To the early days again. So when was your first time going into the business, if you said you were all there? Very early.
Yeah, it was. I mean, food has changed so much, as you know. Like,
your mammy had
bread.
You on the dishes, yeah, early, I'd say.
And that's it. Even the spuds. And all the family worked in it. You know, when you think food has changed, it was mixed grill, it was steaks. My mum was like a kind of hotel manager trained at Calabria Street, and then opened up. I think they bought the building for £1,000.
Wow.
In 1965, and then started opening up, and dad was front of house and all the family. So it's changed incredibly.
Yeah.
We used to open up like 5, maybe 6 days a week, if I'm right. And we used to open up for lunch and dinner. And, like, there was no consistency.
So was the other 9 completely, the other 8 completely useless in the kitchen?
No.
Then,
well, I need to be careful.
You're the only sucker.
Well, I was the only crazy one, you're probably saying. So I suppose my sisters worked front of house. My brother, my twin brother, he was front of house too. He was the wine waiter, but he's actually a pioneer, and which is funny. And then all the family, from peeling potatoes to washing. So
he'd be lying through his teeth when he was saying, absolutely, how nice the wine was.
Absolutely. I'd recommend this. But, you know, a family business, we try to keep that ethos to this day still.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's something very personal. And for me, like, we're open 36 years this year, which is incredible.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
It is,
well,
you know.
And look, going back to when you say it was bombed, I mean, was anybody hurt at that time? Was it closed?
No, it was the UVF. It was. We got warning. I was only a baby, so I really... Or
those
young
bastards,
child.
Yeah.
I can't really remember.
Yeah.
Gary, you know.
Are you fucking... You're
living near the border, it was a tough time.
I tell you, man.
It was.
Yeah.
Definitely.
God forgive me.
Definitely.
Am I allowed to say that, Ed?
But you know what? It's all behind us. And that's the key. And thing has changed. You know, the whole business has...
I spent
changed.
A year in Stormont. My first job after college was in Stormont.
Was it?
During the Good Friday Peace Agreement. Yeah, I lived in East Belfast when I was 19. Yeah, for a long time. And, you know, being in Ermelton, 20 minutes from Derry, 20 minutes from the border, predominantly Protestant town. It's an old plantation town, Ermelton. But there was no... We never knew what hatred was. And then I went to Belfast, East Belfast. I remember, like, one day a boy telling me to get out of a shop, and I locked me and him in it for 20 fucking minutes.
Wow.
I can tell you now. Yeah. I was in just getting Chris, was on a split or whatever, and he says, "Get out, you fiending bastard," to me, you know. And I went, "Are you all right, man?" And I looked around me, and there was one of them wee latches on the door, and I locked the front door and batting him.
Yeah.
And I did, I really did, because I never had any hatred, you know. And I just thought to myself, geez, is there ever going to be peace up here? Because, like, people really hate each other, you know?
Yeah.
I found it, like, I was shocked, you know what I mean? I remember just going, like, you know, all, half my buddies are Protestants and we're the best of pals. But there was genuine hatred up there. And, you know, when you are amongst that.
That's true.
It's, I mean, I couldn't do that now. I'm 45 now. I'd be terrified in that,
how
you
did,
know?
Or maybe you don't know, but how did the business bounce back from that?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose, yeah, it was a bit of that. And then I suppose I was lucky I got a break in the afternoon show and I was on that for every Tuesday for 5 years.
Well, so then you decided to go to college and you figured yeah. out that you wanted to be a chef and you went off the train and...
So I went into Niskillen, so that right. I was, well, I actually applied for Killybegs and I wasn't accepted. Okay. That is the reality.
Well.
So there's a story in that for young chefs, because it's like a roller coaster. Yeah. You follow yeah, yeah. your heart, you follow your dreams, and it wasn't meant to be. So I went into Fermanagh College, I was into college, then I was teaching there for 5 years. So that gave me a bit of confidence. Like my head chef, Carmel, she's with me.
Ah, she's
2 years.
Great, yeah.
She was my student.
Well, so was she,
that, it's evolved like that. So it's lovely when you have.
How long was Glenn with you?
Glenn was with me 16 years.
Wow.
Great guy.
Great guy.
Glenn,
Spurs man, Ed Chef. You'd be glad to hear.
You'd like him. Yes. One of my best friends.
We had Una. She spoke very fondly of her time.
Yeah.
Even though how
Una Leonard. Yeah.
How challenging her time was with you, but she spoke so highly of how she was treated up with you.
And yeah, I don't know if you heard it, but you should listen to it, because the way she spoke about you, Imelda, the team, Glenn, lovely. Carmel, it was, to the point where it saved the year's life nearly.
Wow.
Like, it was unbelievable the way, I didn't know Una, and she started saying, you know, we were basically, thank God that was the kitchen you were working in.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm so proud of her success. She was a gorgeous girl. Really yeah. talented, and the way she's flourished and opened up, and
yeah.
with her cookbook, like she's a yeah. gorgeous girl. And you know, you try and treat staff the way we look at it is the way my mum said, with respect. We'll all have bad days, but the good days will outweigh them.
Aye.
It's as simple as that. And I think respect works both ways,
yeah,
and it definitely does. And it's not a day that I don't learn. Like, we're, as I said, 36 years open. We have a really cool, like, one woman's working for us for 50 years, for working for my family. Isn't that
yeah.
amazing?
Wow.
Where do you get that? You know, like, that loyalty is just special, so it is.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously got the TV shows. You've got all the work with Dunn's.
How important do you attribute that to the success of the business?
Wow. I think it's about having a consistent business and probably doing it one and doing it right. I'll tell you a good story. When I was very young, I was offered to go to Chelsea Football Club. You would know this. First of all,
I do know. I've heard you
and
say.
I said, no way, well, I'm going to Chelsea. So it was, yeah. they wanted to do an Irish restaurant and they wanted me to go over as head chef. I probably was about 22, 23. No, definitely not. Definitely. It was to cook. No.
You a good left
no,
peg on you we didn't know about.
No, definitely not. There's no hidden secrets there. So,
Chopper Maguire.
But there's a nice story to this. So the managing director came over, spent time. We bought him to the Ulster final.
Right.
And actually, Cavan were in it. And he couldn't get over that these were footballers who never got paid. Like, he'd never seen anything like that. And obviously, I got him a chef. I think it was a chef from Galway who used to work in Drumcon House. Can't remember his name. So I got him fixed up with him to go and be his head chef. But I kind of politely declined. And I was offered to come up to Dublin and once in Paris. I know you've been there. And I just love where I live. I'm just happy at what I do. And, you know, now that we have a business that is viable.
And was it to open a restaurant in Chelsea or was it to become head chef within? Because I know Marco did something
that's
in there,
right.
didn't he?
That's
yeah,
right.
He's
that's
got
right.
a restaurant in Chelsea
Village.
Bridge. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Frankie Dettori maybe. Or
that's
the,
right.
Yeah, as far
You're
as I
right.
know. I sneaked in there, pretended to be
now,
a Chelsea
Gary,
fan.
If it was Man United, we might have reconsidered. But anyway.
I know. It'd be hard to turn down United.
Oh.
Could you?
Nah, probably not.
Nah, you'd have to take. You'd have
if they're
to.
If they were playing good now, Gary, you know, if they were.
If they're paying you, right?
You're right. You're right. You're right.
So that's it for today's Dishing It Out Bite Size. Just a little taster to get your mouth watering of what's coming up with the new series that's coming out on Go Loud very shortly or wherever you get your podcasts. As always, give us a like, share with your friends. Get the word out there because the boys are back. Thanks for listening and remember to subscribe and like on Go Loud or wherever you get your pods. Stay tuned, lots more to come.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud, sounds better with us.